So I want to start out by asking you, you call yourself an internet troll. For those out there who don't know what that means, how do you define that?
I define that as using rhetoric to inflame institutions and people to sort of expose the hypocrisies that they portray on the internet.
So give me an example of that. What would be something that, on a typical day, what does an internet troll do? Like, does that mean like exposing a hypocrisy? What kind of a hypocrisy?
Well, what I do is I take data that corporations publish and I use it to criticize them.
Okay, so let's talk about what got you in trouble. You were convicted of computer crimes for a breach of AT&T's customer data in 2010. What happened?
In June of 2010, there was a public AT&T web server, and it was publishing customer records for iPad 3G users, namely just the email address for iPad 3G users. And AT&T admitted at the trial they published this data. There's no dispute that this was publicly accessible. So I think that it was egregiously negligent for AT&T to be publishing information that should remain private. I took a sample of this data to a journalist because I feel if a big company puts you at risk, you deserve to know about it. And more importantly, I get a very visceral pleasure from embarrassing a Fortune 500 company. So I took this to a journalist, and next thing I know, there's two consecutive 5-year felonies on my head.
And how did you go about finding this, though?
Well, we very carefully examined the iPad. Previously,
This was when the iPad had just come out, right?
yes, this was just a couple months afterwards. We had previously looked very closely for browser flaws in Apple's products. So this is sort of what me and my team did is we picked apart software and we figured out how it worked and what was wrong with it. And then we would come forward with the details of what was wrong so that you as a consumer could make an informed decision about the products you buy.
So why did AT&T, I mean, it's embarrassing for a company, right? For AT&T.
Yes.
But why did they feel that they needed to press criminal charges?
Well, AT&T didn't approach the FBI. It was the other way around. The FBI comes to AT&T and they send them an email that says, we're interested in pursuing this. And there was even someone at the trial, R. David Halsey from AT&T. And one of the replies to that thread is there was no security breached. I don't think there's a case here. The AT&T's lead investigator thought that there wasn't a crime committed. So I think it's a sign of this wave of over-aggressive federal prosecutions that really target people who come out and expose corporate criminals or just embarrass important people. You're not allowed to criticize important people in this country anymore.
I mean, I want to just pick up on what you said a minute ago, which is that you get a visceral thrill from exposing things like this. What's so thrilling about it? Why not go to AT&T and be like, you guys have messed up big time. You should be hiring people like me to fix it. Why not be more productive?
I think that this is productive. If you look at the information security establishment as it stands, most of it is geared towards developing software exploits and then not telling anybody about those exploits, keeping them and selling them in secret to governments, both foreign, domestic, private entities. So you have the information security industry, which is not really geared towards protecting the little guy. It's geared towards making a dollar. And I've really chosen to forsake making a dollar because I am tired of the status quo in this country, and I'd rather be a critic than go and work a 9-to-5 and slave away so that some guy in a that graduated Harvard and is from an important family can sit there and put the public at risk and get away with it.
But the analogy that I've heard is, just AT&T made a mistake, right? And let's say, I forget to lock my front door one day. That doesn't give anyone the right to come into my house and go through my stuff,
I would
right?
absolutely agree with that. And AT&T didn't put this behind a door. They literally, the word they used was published. This was on the open internet. This is the HTTP, the protocol involved that you use when you use a web browser. This is a publishing mechanism. There are very cohesive standards on the internet on what defines public and private. HTTP actually has a status code to declare what is unauthorized and what is public information. And
HTTP is that code or, you know, four letters that we see before every URL, every web address,
yes,
right?
Yes, the hypertext transfer protocol. So HTTP has a status code that you send if you're not supposed to be viewing a given bit of data. This is how the protocol works. And they were not sending that status code. They were publishing this on the open internet by their own admission.
And why do you think they would? Is it just sloppiness? What is it?
I think that it is sloppiness. I think that that these giant telecoms are behemoths that would not exist if not for protections for their oligopolies. These are people who have been out-innovated time and time again. They do not care about providing a good product. They do not care about not ripping their customers off. They'll actively swindle them when they get the chance. And they do not care about your privacy or security. And the only way to get a corporation to care is to embarrass them over and over again. Microsoft, for example, now has a very, very effective information security establishment. Probably they have the best InfoSec team of a software company that big in the world now, and it's because they were held to task over and over and over again about products until they finally got, hey, we have to pay attention. We cannot lie to people any longer. We have to solve problems.
Okay, so do you think it made a difference in terms of AT&T? I mean, I have AT&T on my phone, and I was dismayed to hear what you discovered.
I don't think it made a difference. I think that as long as they believe that the federal government will persecute people that embarrass them, that they have no incentive to fix the issues that are systemic in their infrastructure. In fact, months later, after I discovered this bug, sometime about a year later in 2011, there was a very similar issue where they were publishing, if you would enter in an email address, it would return the phone number. It was a very similar issue, almost identical, in that they were autofilling a form. They will do this over and over again because they feel that they will be able to just throw somebody in jail if anybody dares say that the emperor has no clothes.
I mean, it kind of feels like, wow, this seems like a big deal made over, you know, all the time and money that's been spent to prosecute you and the lawyers involved. And I mean, aren't there bigger fish to fry? Why do you think they're making such a big deal out of this?
Well, it's very clear that the U.S. attorneys have no interest in prosecuting criminals. The fact that HSBC is going free for laundering billions of dollars for drug cartels and terrorists makes that very clear. What they are afraid of is not people getting robbed, because that's the status quo. They have no problem with that anymore. What they are afraid of is anybody that criticizes the establishment. And I'm not out to steal from anybody. I'm out to criticize powerful people and express my First Amendment rights as an American. And they're much more angry about that than they are about any criminal behavior.
I mean, at the risk of sounding like a mother, part of me thinks, like, you're obviously super bright and understand computers like not a lot of people do. Wouldn't there be a more constructive way of putting your talents to work?
I don't think so. I think that I'm occupying the space that is most effective for consumers, that is most artistic for my type of outlet. I don't think that I could do a more effective piece of work. I think that this is the right way to go about it. It's definitely in line with the will of the framers. I think that if Andrew Jackson were alive today and he could code, he would be a lot more mean than I would be.
You know, it's funny that you say that, because I was just rereading that pretty infamous New York Times Magazine article in which you were profiled. And it was about hackers. And you were quoted as saying, "I hack, I ruin lives, I make piles of money." Do you still live by that, or have your goals changed?
I think that the people in power deserve to have their lives ruined. They are thieves. They are seditious thugs. They are liars, and they are criminals. And one day there will be courts with integrity to bring them to justice.
Now, sounds like they're going to have the last laugh. You are due to be sentenced on the 25th of February and are likely to face 10 years in prison. Why not take a plea like your fellow hacker, Daniel Spitler, who's the other person who breached AT&T's safety, or whatever we want to call it?
Nobody breached AT&T's safety, but I won't take a plea because I will not bow to seditious thugs that want to prevent people from exercising their First Amendment rights. I have the right to criticize powerful people. I have the right to cite things that a corporation, by its own admission, publishes. I will not bow out just because some bully in the government thinks that he can silence me by sticking me in a cage. I would sooner die than kneel to tyranny.
So what's your plan for when you're in prison?
I will write books. I will read a lot. I plan on going through Donald Knuth's The Art of Computer Programming. It is a very large work. I got to catch up on my Milton and Byron and Keats.
And I guess I just want to ask you, you know, one of the reasons why I think people will particularly be interested in hearing from you is in part because of Aaron Swartz, the young internet freedom computer genius, many have called him, who committed suicide recently and who was also due to be in court. Do you want to turn yourself into an Aaron Swartz figure to raise awareness? Or why do you think you haven't gotten as much attention as him?
I think that at least among the people who are serious industry people, there's a lot of people that even say the comparison between what I did and what Aaron Swartz did, like if you take away the cult of sainthood from Aaron Swartz, who literally like, you know, stuck a computer in a closet at MIT and repeatedly evaded a network ban, versus me taking published data, that's what AT&T admits, there's that what I did seems a lot more saintly than Aaron Swartz. If you take away his cult of sainthood and my cult of being a prick on the internet, that my case is a lot more reasonable. And I think that, for example, Orrin Kerr, he's a constitutional scholar, and he really wrote the book on this statute, the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act, and he's testified before Congress for it, and he's joined our team as of a couple weeks ago. So I think that the people that are really in the know are looking to this case, and I don't really care that a bulk of the internet is sort of resentful of me. I think there's a line from the Gospel of Luke that I think is very relevant, Luke 6:22, and it says, "Blessed are ye when they shall hate you and separate you from their company and reproach you and cast out your name as evil." And I sort of live by that code. I'm out not to bring happiness and sing kumbaya. I'm out. This is a war. This is a war for our culture. And I'm fighting big media, and I'm not here to make friends. I'm here to transform our society.
I mean, it just seems a little confusing to me because on the one hand, you just called yourself a prick on the internet, and then you're quoting the gospel. And there's a lot. On the one hand, I feel like, wow, you see yourself in, you know, changing the way that America runs. On the other hand, I feel like, oh, he's just an immature like guy who really gets like computer programming and wants to mess with people. Like, sometimes you cut a sympathetic figure and then other times you don't. And in that article in the New York Times in 2008, you came across as kind of scary.
Well, I think that article was by a biased journalist who wanted to demonize our cultural movement. It had some outright lies in it. There's always somebody in the media that's looking for a story. If you remember the Stephen Glass incident, there's a lot of stories about hackers out there written by journalists with no integrity who are looking to twist words out of context, make stuff up in the Stephen Glass case, like out of thin air. And there's definitely a lot of that in that Matt Schwartz piece in the New York Times. But insofar as the dichotomy,
but you're no stranger to PR. I mean, you obviously know how to work it so that you get your message out. There is a give and take here, right?
Absolutely. I'm not, like I said. You say there's a dichotomy in when I quote the gospel, but there isn't. If you're familiar with Jesus, Luke 14:26, for example, he demands hatred, and John 8:44, he says to the Pharisees, "Ye are of your father the devil, and the lusts of your father ye will do." There's some very bold, mean rhetoric And Jesus was mean and wild when he needed to be. And many of my other heroes, Brigham Young, we fought a war on U.S. soil, the Utah War, when he refused to bow to the U.S. government. Andrew Jackson got in duels all the time. The people that built this nation, especially the parts of it that I care about, they weren't nice all the time. They were warlike when they needed to be.
Okay, so for this last question, let's bring it back to 2013. Would you rather now be called an internet troll, or is the better term hacktivist? Have you sort of graduated to the next level?
I think that the primary mode of my art is rhetoric. It's not computers. I learned a long time ago that the machines that I want to transform are not electronic. They're cultural. So I think that I'm going to continue using rhetoric as my primary paintbrush, and that's not going to change anytime soon. I'm far more of a troll than a hacker.
And your last few days outside of prison?
I've been writing some epic poetry in blank verse. I've been, you know, partying till 6 a.m., drum and bass and techno and Goa, and just living life.
Very good. Andrew Auernheimer, thank you so very much for your time.
Thank you for having me here.